Did you? Okay, thanks everyone. Continue on, we've got lots to get through. At this time, at the time of Big Clark's death, we were able to look at his probate papers, and by this time the McDonald brothers had mounted a £4,835 debt to Big Clark. At the planned cheesemaking operation at Spring Station, with the very latest scientific techniques, was intended to change that. Next slide. Interestingly, William, when Eliza died, she was buried with her estranged husband on the same monument on the other side. And that, I think that was William's doing there. I don't know what Eliza stated about that. Next slide. Now here we have the papers of Big Clark's probate. It's got the property at Berwick, 3,180 acres. I'll just get a focus. Go as best I can. Here we go. Right. It had improvements on the property, 13.5 miles of three rail fencing, it had 4 miles of log fencing, 6 water holes, buildings only to the value of £75, I'll explain that later, and drainage, £600. When William inherited his father's properties, there was a bit of a public scandal because it was stated that he was trying to understate the value of his inheritance so he wouldn't have to pay so much probate duty. His father's properties, they were so large that the emission of a homestead on the property was quite possible. I mean, the probate had to be settled within a fixed period of time. Also, that £4,800 debt was an asset to the Clark estate, so the household could have been put in class in that debt that the McDonald brothers had built up. Okay, at this stage I'm just going to divert a bit to give a bit of a history of cheese making up to this time, and a bit of knowledge on how cheese is made. Milk is composed of solid material suspended in water, and up to the 1850s it was known that adding rennet to milk curdles it, and if the curd is broken up, the whey leaks out, expelling the water in the milk, which leaves the solid particles of the milk behind. You put the broken curd into a press and it combines together, and after a period of curing you get cheese. By the way, rennet is an extract of the forestomach of a baby calf. The curdling process was discovered when they used to use stomachs as water containers, and when they used the forestomach of a calf, milk curdled on them. What wasn't known about cheese making, and that's all they knew about cheese making, do that process, you get cheese. What they didn't know was why cheese sometimes turned out sour, why sometimes it was lumpy, why sometimes it didn't taste so good. There's a lot of mysteries surrounded in cheese making. But what scientists discovered in the 1850s in regards to sourness was that the sourness stemmed from lactic acid, which is a byproduct of cheese making. It was remaining in the cheese rather than being expelled in the whey. And to overcome this problem, plus the other problems I was talking about, they developed this cheddar system of cheese making. And what the cheddar system involved was a strict set of, very, very strict set of rules, if followed to the letter, allowed a consistently high quality product to be produced, and high quality cheese to be produced. This invention of the cheddar system basically enabled cheese to become commercially viable. And also cheddar cheese had a long shelf life, very important for outlying areas in Australia where there was no refrigeration and long shipment times to get it to Melbourne. And in the 1870s there was a worldwide movement. Factories popped up everywhere and they rapidly went into full production producing cheese on the cheddar system. The big drawback, however, of the cheddar system was that you needed a lot of capital to get a cheese factory going. You needed an elaborate plant and that wasn't required to adhere to the cheddar system. Farmers got around this problem by forming cooperatives, and that's pooling their capital, also with some local entrepreneurs in their areas, to build the factories. And this is what occurred in Far East Gippsland. Next slide. Just going to focus on that. Okay, this is the area of East Gippsland that was settled at the time, or into agriculture. They tried cropping out there, it failed. For small blocks of land which people were allowed to have, were only allowed to purchase. Big Clark was able to lease further out here in big tracts, but you can only purchase small amounts there. Dairying was the only alternative. They tried butter making, but a description of the butter coming to the Melbourne market was that it was greasy, rancid, smelly, and it was only by sheer courtesy that it was turned to butter. Cheese was less perishable and could be shipped to Melbourne in good condition. There's six cheese factories here that popped up in East Gippsland. The circles show the area from which they collected milk. They were quite big operations. These were all cooperative cheese factories with entrepreneurs in the local area. That's during the 1870s. However, in the Berwick area, cheese factory capital was supplied to tenants by wealthy landlords. William Clark certainly fell into this category, and a lot of cheese factories were set up on this basis. Big Clark's estate was £4 million, that's conservatively. In today's dollars, you're talking about $200 to $300 million. And most of that was comprised of land only. If you had to put buildings on it, goodness knows. Of the inheritance, William inherited all the Victorian properties, as he previously promised, sort of, and that was worth £1.5 million. The youngest son, Joseph, he inherited the Tasmanian, South Australian properties by that time, and New Zealand properties that probably worth about £1.5 million, and the remaining £1 million was divided up amongst other family members. However, poor old Eliza, she received £300, but £700 per annum for her living expenses. This received scathing press at the time. William, complete with his inheritance, wasted no time in putting his grand plans into action. He immediately set off to England in 1874, or could have been early 1875, but sorry about that, and with a £25,000 budget. And with it, he purchased all the advanced farming equipment for his Dowling Forest properties, Dowling Forest Run, which was one of his main tenant farm areas. And this time he most probably purchased the cheese making equipment for Spring Station. Okay, we've got some slides of possible probable equipment that he would have bought at the time. Here we have, this is a cheese vat that's typical of the time. It's double jacketed, wooden on the outside. Next slide, please. Copper lined on the inside, welded and sealed. The double jacket allowed steam to be injected in the middle, and that was to maintain the milk at exactly the correct temperature. It could only have a range of about 5 degrees in a cheddar system at all times, so you had to have your temperatures correct. Certainly having one of these cheese vats was the best way to go. Next slide, please. And also bought things like curd breakers. This is one here, and if we go to the next slide. I've changed the light on it, and you can see how the shadow's been chopped into small strips. Well, these curd knives were put in one end of the vat and run to the other end. And basically what's happened to the light there, that's what was done to the solid curd after the rennet was added. And next slide. Also purchased things like a curd mill. You can see the grate down there to chop up the curd into small pieces. That process was done just before the cheese was salted. Also when William was in England, he engaged the services of Mr. R. McIver. He was an eminent agricultural chemist with degrees in Germany and Britain, and he was to come to Victoria, come to Victoria to provide the scientific knowledge to farmers. He lectured broadly throughout Victoria, and this turned out to be a great public service to Victorians. There was no Department of Agriculture at the time, and this started the chain of events that established William's reputation as a valuable public citizen. But, however, MacIver returned to Victoria before William did, and it was probably to work on this project. Next slide. Here we have the advertisement in the Argus, 5th of March 1875. George Brown, architect, required tenders for the making and burning of 75,000 bricks at Berwick. Full particulars obtained from his office. And on the 24th of August 1875, George Brown, architect and surveyor, on behalf of William J. Clark, Esquire, invites tenders for the erection of a kitchen and dairy buildings at Berwick, plans at his office. That's the advertisements calling for the tenders for the construction of the old cheese factory. Okay, and the cheese factory that was built was immaculately constructed to conform with all the latest specifications required for cheese making under the Cheddar system. One of the important things needed was a cool room to store the night's milk. Cheese making was made once a day in the morning, and that was a combination of the night's milk and the morning's milk. And if you could keep your milk in a room of about 20 degrees centigrade, you could most of the pitfalls of the lactic acid I was talking about could be avoided with this stage alone. Now, the construction of the cheese factory is triple brick, and it has a cavity in between. And this triple brick was for insulation, because the milking and the dairy work in Australia was done over the summer. And if you've ever walked into the cheese factory on a hot day, it stays cool, remarkably cool. One of the other features you needed was a ventilated curing room that could be maintained at 20 degrees. The upstairs of the cheese factory, it had fireplaces on either end, and to keep the place at 20 degrees if it got cooler. And this is the ventilation vents in the top story of the cheese factory. I've done this photograph just to reinforce. We've been told a million times it's double brick. It's not double brick, it is triple brick. 1, 2, 3, with a cavity in the middle. Pure insulation quality. Another feature of the curing room, if we go to the next slide, was the windows built at ground level. This is because when you're curing cheese, you're not supposed to have direct sunlight shining on the cheese. It messes up the colour. And these windows are small and low to the ground. The only time sun would ever come through them would be in the evening or morning at sunrise or sunset. Okay, another important thing that you needed for cheese making was the washhouse that was constructed with the cheese factory. Next slide. Okay, it was also doubled as a kitchen, but there's kitchen and washhouse. And the reason it was necessary for this was that the cheese making environment had to be one of absolute cleanliness. Milk absorbs odours from the air, or any substance that it comes into contact with, any putrid substance or smelly substance, it goes into the milk and it goes into the taste of the cheese. And once you get the tiniest bit of a substance in milk, it's like a cancer. It just spreads throughout the milk because of the bacteria in it. Okay, the design features in the factory itself, the bottom floor was for the cheese making. It had the floor dipped from both ends to the middle and had a drain, and that was so the floor could be washed out every day. And the kitchen wash house, that was necessary because you need to use a lot of linen in cheese making, a lot of cloths. The cheese makers that got pretty messy with the vats had to have their clothes washed every day. You can have smelly clothes when you're in there. And also, any implements used for cheese making had to be scrupulously washed every day. So that's why the wash house is an essential element of the cheese factory. And just the description they had in a book at that time was that any metal cheese instrument had to be washed until it shined. The architect who designed these two buildings, these two functional buildings, very functional buildings for cheese making, was George Brown, and he was by no way an insignificant person. George Brown was kept very, very busy in 1874-5 with a flurry of grand building projects on William's inherited properties across Victoria. These include William's mansion that he built for himself at Sunbury, Rupert's Wood. This is, sorry about the picture. They wouldn't let me reproduce one without a whole lot of hassle. Built in the Italian Renaissance style, and that was very popular in the late 19th century in Victoria. He also, George Brown designed that monument of Big Clark that you saw before, that impressive monument. Next slide. He also, George Brown was responsible for the School of Art in Ballarat, which is now Her Majesty's Theatre. He also built the Morley Coal Depot in Sandridge in Port Melbourne. And finally, or just in within this flurry of building, was also the old cheese factory. Next slide, please. Okay, the architectural style of the cheese factory, it's fortified Italian Renaissance. The chimney mouldings are consistent with that. The eaves brackets, consistent of the fortified Italian Renaissance. Another important style at that time was symmetry. Perfect symmetry, as you can see in this sign. And also fortified properties that had small windows. Now you can work out here that George Brown adapted an architectural style that was also compatible with the technical cheese-making requirements of the building. Very clever bit of building. George Brown himself was somewhat of a character. He was born in 1847, started practice in 1868 at 21 years of age, and died in 1911. He was ostentatious and known as Diamond Brown. He used to wear diamonds all the time. He had a volatile temper. He was prepared to experiment with architecture, and his other achievements were in particular was the Melbourne Theatre Royale building. He was a high class architect, and he just worked on about four major projects a year. And his career was helped no end by William Clark, of course. Because just one final mystery in the starting up of the cheese factory, and that was how Murdoch MacDonald, who was a shepherd, learnt how to make cheese. I've given you a very abridged version of cheese making. It's a long, complex, and highly skilled process. In Britain, from 1500 to the 1850s, it was considered a domestic activity and the responsibility of the women. The word dairy itself comes from the Middle English word derry, D-E-R-R-I-E, which is female servant. As you might remember in the immigration papers, Murdoch MacDonald's sister was a dairymaid. That was her occupation, to do the dairying on the farm. Next slide. The way Murdoch MacDonald probably learned how to make cheese was this incredible publication. It was brought out in 1869. The gentleman sent someone overseas to get notes on the cheddar system, and he went to the Scotch, English, and American authorities, the three big areas of cheese making. It was in its fourth edition here, and the reason it went to four editions was because it was so successful. People who had never made cheese before, if they followed the instructions to the word, they were turning out a high-class article. And the instructions in that book on how to construct a cheese factory are mirrored perfectly with our old cheese factory. Complete correlation of facts. And at this stage in history, with the cheese going into factory production, the work of a cheese factory was taken up by the men. The idea for the construction of the cheese factory in Berwick probably came from a number of other elaborate cheese factories in the area that Murdoch MacDonald would have seen emerging in the early 1870s. Next slide, please. We have an advertisement for the auction of the King's Hill Cheese Factory in Berwick. That's north of the end of Beaumont Road, up near King Road in Harkaway. Operated by a German fellow, Gustav Koenig. He was an owner-operator. The features of the cheese factory, it was worked by steam, which our cheese factory was as well. Had a separate bathroom or washroom, same again. Running water in all the rooms and in the house. And it had a cow loft that could hold 40 cows and hay, etc. Plus, it had a pretty grand homestead on it as well. And with this section here, it says, or a complete cheese manufactory and dairy farm adjoining the famed model cheese farm of the Honourable James Buchanan MLC. There's a bit of a competition going around for the best cheese factory. The old cheese factory here was by far the most elaborate one there. Old cheese factory itself was quite an impressive operation when it was up and going. Had a large milking shed which 60 cows could be milked at once. It put out 150 cheeses a week. Next slide, please. Okay, 150 cheeses, 150 20-pounders. If I was standing next to that press, it would come up to probably about here on me. Quite big cheeses, that's the way they made them. On the cheese press, you had the inner shell and an outer shell. You put the curd in, and when you pressed it down, it would crush the curd. Well, you weren't supposed to crush it, but combine it together, and the whey would leak out of either end through holes here. Here's some of the cheese cloths that were necessary for it, and that's what I mean about needing the wash hats. The factory employed 12 hands regularly, and you've got to remember the three McDonald brothers were there with Murdoch and Malcolm. Yeah, Murdoch and Malcolm with about six children each. They sent their cheese to Melbourne on wagons when the railway was there. The only possible, or a possible explanation was, well, they said it was more convenient, but they might have sold cheese on the way into Melbourne, which is why they might have done it that way. The cheese was originally exported to Queensland, but later on the sales were put in the hands of a Melbourne agent. And we've got a next slide, thanks. Right, in the South Bourke and Mornington Journal, remember I said the counties of Bourke and Mornington, this is now the Dandenong Journal, but this is a local paper for the area. Got butter and cheese, John Bartram and Son, 8 Queen Street in Melbourne, largest exporters of cheese, and agents for several leading cheese factories. I'm not saying this is our agent, but there were cheese agents in Melbourne only too happy to purchase cheddar cheese coming in from Gippsland at that time. Okay, and the next slide. And this is a map showing the cheese agents within Melbourne. There was an eastern market up here and a western market down here. They're all the cheese agents, and there was also cheese auctions. And that's where that description of a putrid butter came from, someone visiting that one time. Okay, when the cheese factory got up and running, Murdoch McDonald became quite a well-known personality in the area, and the family events were commonly recorded in the South Bourke Mornington Journal. The first one, however, was a pretty big personal blow to Murdoch. May 1st, 1878, we regret to record the demise of Mrs. McDonald, wife of Murdoch McDonald. She died at age 39, and her remains were interred at the Berwick Cemetery on Friday last. The funeral was largely attended. However, the reason that we had knowledge about the cheese factory, that's how much production they did and how many people they employed, was due to the next joint venture that Murdoch McDonald and William Clark set out, or next joint venture of Murdoch McDonald and William Clark. They set out to promote their cheese factory at the Melbourne exhibition in a special dairy show that was on the 19th and 20th of November 1880. The Melbourne exhibition was the opening of the exhibition buildings. It was an international exhibition with people from all over the world. William was appointed as president of the Victorian Commissioners, and that was basically president of Victoria. The governor was the official at functions, but basically William was the leader of the Melbourne exhibition in Victoria. He'd also earned a good reputation from his model tenant farms on Dowland Forest, and he was moving around in social circles. He was elected to the Melbourne Club in 1862. And it was most likely because of William's influence at the time that they got a very, very rare feature article in the South Bourke and Mornington Journal. I went through numerous years of it and didn't find any other feature articles on a particular person or their property or business like the one I'm just about to show you. Okay, here's a picture of the opening of the exhibitions in Melbourne, and there's a picture of William Clark, he later became Sir William Clark, Victorian President. Next slide, please. Okay, here's our article on farming at Berwick, the dairy farm of Murdoch-McDonald. Very rare feature article, gave us really good description of the property. What else haven't I pointed out? Oh, they expended £8,000 in wages in about the first 5 years, so, but they said by the amount of cheese it was very profitable, so it was quite an impressive operation. This article, November 17th, 1880, 2 days before the dairy exhibition, it's probably Sir Williams, William's influence at the time that got that article written up in the paper, and of course it'd be the icing on the cake if they won the award at the Melbourne exhibition at the dairy fair. And in that same edition of the paper, they had those who, for the purpose of exhibiting butter and cheese and bacon in the special exhibition, lodge your entries now. Okay, next slide please. Unfortunately, they didn't win a prize though at the Melbourne exhibition. They had exhibits from Sale, Lancefield, which is near Sunbury, Berwick, Riagawong, all those areas I was talking about. Warrnambool was another big area. The leading honour was Mr. M. Burke of Woodstock. Excuse us again. Okay. And if you note down the bottom,